This is June 2nd, 2015. This recording you're about to hear is on the Chuck Harder Show. Terry Reed, Gene Chip Tatum, Castellaro, DEA. And this was made on April the 24th, 1997, folks.
And welcome to Chuck Harder's For the People. And on behalf of Chuck, this is Phil Paleologos. Chuck is off today, but will return Monday. Meanwhile, I'm very pleased to be joined by special guest host Terry Reed, a favorite and familiar voice to Chuck Harder fans. Terry Reed is a former Air Force intelligence officer who served in the most secret project of the Vietnam War, Task Force Alpha. In civilian life, Terry was recruited by the FBI counterintelligence combat the illegal sale of technology to the Soviet Union and later became a CIA asset. Terry Reed is the co-author of the best-selling book, Compromised. Now, America, if you are an Oliver North supporter, fasten your safety belt and be prepared to be shot. United States District Court for the District of Columbia. United States of America versus George Herbert Walker Bush. Donald P. Gregg, Felix Rodriguez, also known as Max Gomez, Oliver L. York, also known as William Good, also known as Mr. Green, Richard V. Secord, also known as Richard Kopp, also known as Major General Richard Adams, Robert W. Owen, also known as P.C., also known as The Courier, Adolfo Calero, Juan Norwin Meneses Candero, Oscar Danilo Blandon Reyes, William F. Weld, all charged with racketeering, conspiracy to import narcotics, continuing criminal enterprise, conspiracy to obstruct justice, conspiracy to obstruct Congress. Terry Reed, welcome to the program, and what is this all about?
Well, first of all, thanks for inviting me, and I certainly want to extend my thanks to Chuck for allowing me to co-host today. But, you know, Phil, if we had a real Justice Department, what you just read would be a real indictment instead of a draft indictment. What you've got there in your hand is actually a 20-page indictment to prove to the American people in a court of law that the National Security Council and others under the control of George Bush were actually involved in cocaine trafficking during the so-called Contra War. And when I heard that I had an opportunity to host this show, I thought, it's time that I strike back. I know that Oliver North certainly has a talk program in which he spends 3 hours a day typically wrapping himself in the flag and the Bible and convincing people that that he didn't do anything wrong. And he did, and he knows it, and it's time he was held accountable. So I hope today we can just really lay this thing open. In fact, I'd like to call this program the postmortem of Oliver North.
Wow.
It's time that he was dragged off of his high horse. So it's just a sad commentary that we don't have the proper venue other than talk radio to hold these people accountable. But be that as it may, we're going to do our best today to convince the American people that there is no war on drugs.
Now, you were a friend, and you hung around Oliver North.
That's right. You know, I tell this story from a very personal angle. You know, I wrote a book, as you just brought up, called Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA, and I really regret the fact that I was so kind to North in that book. And I may point out to the listening audience, the reason I was kind was I thought that this man would actually eventually do the right thing, that he would see the error of his ways and realize that he needed to be on a witness stand in Arkansas discussing not only the CIA's drug complicity, but also discussing Bill Clinton's complicity in all this as a young governor.
Mm-hmm.
But North didn't do that. And so, like I say, I really regret the fact that I didn't write more harshly about him as I wrote my book. I was sort of muzzled by my lawyers, hoping, again, that he would become a very effective witness for us. But I'm convinced right now that he sits there in Washington and Virginia taking the hard CIA line and certainly the Washington establishment line that nothing went on. But I think if you stay tuned today, folks, you'll realize that there is a witness base of people out there to prove this indictment, to take it into a federal court and hold these people accountable.
What do you mean by a witness base, Terry?
Well, this is an indictment. Of course, if you've ever studied the criminal justice system, you know, an indictment process is just the first step of holding people accountable. They're then typically brought before a judge and arraigned, and of course, that's when they get their lawyers and go about their business defending themselves.
Yes.
Then you actually go into court, like the Oklahoma City bombing, for example. The trial is now started, and so in a trial, to prove this indictment, you would have to call witnesses and have access to documents and that type of thing to prove your case. And so today, we have two witnesses lined up that will discuss various aspects of the so-called enterprise. Mm-hmm. And that's a sort of a key term we need to extend out there, because that is what Mr. Lawrence Walsh, the independent counsel, referred to this whole time frame as this enterprise. And the enterprise in this case certainly led to a subversion of our Constitution, elements of our law enforcement, sort of where the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing,
yeah,
kind of a scenario. Of course, there were massive violations of the so-called Boland Amendment, the law designed to keep us out of Nicaragua. All of this was sort of a cover in which a nefarious drug element was being utilized to not only bring in drugs to sell and make profits to support an illegal war, but also to line the pockets of various greedy politicians. So that's what we hope to do today.
And the witness that you have on hand now is?
The first witness of the day is going to be Mr. Sully Castillo.
All right.
Former DEA agent. One heck of a story to tell of what it's like to be a law enforcement officer based on foreign soil, in this case in Central America, as a DEA agent, and discovering that the CIA is in the drug business.
Mm-hmm.
And then telling a very personal story of what happens to an agent such as himself, who still wants to hold people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it includes people out of the National Security Council.
Okay. Hello, Sally. Welcome.
Well, thank you for having me. And first of all, you know, I would like to just start off with a little quotation that really applies to a lot of people, including Oliver North and myself, and that there are no great men. You know, there are only great challenges that ordinary men like ourselves were forced by circumstances to meet. So, from an agent's point of view, I would like to tell you guys how our foreign policy has failed, especially down in Central America. You know, we have to choose a date, a time, and a place where U.S. foreign policy went wrong. It would be probably 1986, and the region would be Central America. You know, we had major problems down there, the patchwork that American agencies operated in that area, the deals they struck with assassins, murderers, and drug traffickers in order to carry out their mission. A lot of people will ask, well, what mission are you talking about? Well, I am talking about sleeping with the cartels. You see, for several years, I fought in the trenches of the front lines of the Reagan-Bush so-called drug war. I was trying to stamp out what I had considered America's greatest foreign threat. But when I was stationed down in Central America, it was really shocking to find out that we have what we call the drug war follies. You know, while our government shouted, just say no, you know, the entire Central and South American countries were falling to what is now known as a cocaine democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not understand, Terry, you know, one of the reasons was the fact that how did we have one arm of the government down there find the so-called war on drugs while the other arm was sleeping with the cartels?
I know.
And when I say the other arm, I'm talking about the CIA, national security agencies, people that were actually sleeping with the cartels. And the sad thing about it, Terry, there was nothing covert about it. Everybody in El Salvador knew what was going on. You know,
except the American people.
And the American people, you know, had no concept of what the heck was going on. And basically, one of the reasons, Terry, it's like I told Foster, Michael Foster from Lawrence Walsh's office, you know, and Jack Baum. I said, see, if you guys are going to investigate an incident, you have an investigation group, what's the first thing you do? And so you go down to Central America and you'll interview the federal agents that are down there, conducted the investigation, and nobody ever went down there to investigate anything in regards to the conflicts involved in narcotics trafficking or the CIA involved in trafficking.
Yeah, we've been given what I call a judicial placebo.
Exactly.
These hearings that we just witnessed in last August and September,
yeah.
That were hearings allegedly designed to get into the reality of the CIA drug trafficking.
Right.
I'm sure you're like myself. I sat back and sort of laughed because the witnesses being called, for the most part, were journalists.
Exactly.
Who hadn't lived the story at all. Yet the American people, I'm sure if you're not really in the know and you turn on your television and you see C-SPAN covering these, you're given this warm and fuzzy feeling that, well, the government is concerned. But, you know, we've got a heck of a witness base put together that that my wife and I, Janice, were never allowed to present in federal court in Arkansas because we wanted to prove this thing.
Why weren't you allowed?
The indictment reads.
Terry, why weren't you allowed?
Well, that gets into a long story about the long arm of the executive branch that controls the judicial branch these days. It just, I'm just convinced as an American citizen that you cannot try the system by the system. They're just not going to allow you to do that. Mm-hmm. And this was a case in which we worked for 5 hard years to put a case together to basically prove this indictment.
Right.
And weren't allowed to bring in our evidence. At the 11th hour, the judge, Judge George Howard Jr., the same judge, I'm going to point out it as the Whitewater case, decided to eliminate about 80% of our evidence and force us to compress our litigation schedule down from 6 weeks to 2 days.
Lord.
So that's the game that's played by the executive branch, and then we, the American people, not only pay for a war on drugs in which we don't get our money's worth, but you know, my real concern, and I might point out because I know Shelley and I feel a common interest here, we're not out throwing stones at America. We're both Vietnam veterans. We're patriotic people.
Yes.
We served our country. I know Shelley's father recently is a World War II vet that just finally got his Bronze Star. Shelley was decorated in Vietnam from his service there. You know, we're the guys that paid the price to live here.
You bet.
And we're not out trying to demoralize or overthrow the U.S. government by holding certain people accountable, as people in Washington would like to have you believe.
Yes.
Yeah, Terry, one of the things that I would like to say that first, there are so important facts that, you know, you must keep in mind as you try to understand my story. First, Terry, that the crimes and atrocities described so vividly in my story were committed by U.S. government officials. There was
right.
a massive cover-up by the DEA, State Department, and the CIA.
Shelley, maybe we can get to that point when we return. The bailiff here needs to take a quick intermission. America, Chuck Harder will be back on Monday, and our special guest host is best-selling author Terry Reid, the co-author of Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. And also joining us is former Drug Enforcement Administration agent Shelley Costillo. Welcome back to Chuck Harder, who will be back on Monday. In the meantime, our special guest host is the best-selling author Terry Reid, the co-author of Compromise, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. And also joining us is a former DEA agent, Shelley Costillo. And Shelley, you were right in the midst of a thought about Nicaragua when we broke for that commercial. Continue on, if you will.
Yes, sir. Well, the things I was trying to say, that there are certain important facts that, you know, that we try to keep in mind if you try to understand my story. And first, that the crimes and atrocities described so vividly in my story were committed by U.S. government officials. And I was saying, like, George Bush, Felix Sosa, and Oliver North. And, you know, as you know, there is impressive evidence on record that shows that the U.S. government officials who turned a blind eye during this whole thing should be held responsible for what happened in our streets. You know, is it happening in our streets today? And second and foremost, that this is a first-hand account by me, which I documented in my journal while I was with the DEA. I was assigned to Central America in 1985, and I was the agent at Gabriel Salvador. And upon my arrival, I was advised that, you know, there was a covert operation being conducted by the White House and being run by Oliver North, and that, they had received intelligence gathering that the Carters were heavily involved in narcotics trafficking.
Silly. Silly.
Well, if you don't mind me interrupting here for a second, I might point out that most of the material we're referring to today is actually contained in this draft indictment that was put together by the Executive Intelligence Review there in Washington. A little later, I'll be telling people how they can get a copy of that. But, most of this evidence that Selly is talking about, Phil, is actually taken from the various government documents, including the Kerry Report. If you recall, there was a Kerry commission established during the Iran-Contra hearings to look into the narco-terrorism issue.
The Senate Foreign Relations Committee.
Yeah, and then you had the Independent Counsel's final report for Iran-Contra, which very few people read. They sort of got bogged down in the shot clock ran out on their attention span.
So it's all documented.
Yeah, and let me ask you, Sally, here's a question. I mean, I'm looking at in this draft indictment, for example, on July the 12th, 1985, in Oliver North's own notebook, there's an entry that reads, $14 million to finance came from drugs. Now, Phil, that's in Oliver North's own handwriting, out of his own notebooks that initially were classified. You know, people have been fighting for years to get these documents unredacted.
Right.
So, Sally, I mean, let's get into it. I mean, is there evidence that North knew about your activities to interdict his drug operation?
Absolutely, there's a lot of evidence, and one of the evidence to show is the fact that we have received cable traffic from Costa Rica, for example, asking us to check out Hangars 4 and 5. There was an agent by the name of Sandy Gonzalez down in Costa Rica at the time who sent me a cable requesting for me to check out Hangars 4 and 5 in La Paco. Well, guess what? Hangars 4 and 5 were owned and operated by the CIA, being run by Felix Rodriguez and Oliver North. And their intelligence indicated that there was a lot of cocaine going into it, into those two hangars. Mind you, I started several reports implicating a lot of this trafficking going out of El Pango, and it was all covered in the in case file. For example, I'll give you a case file, DEA case file number TG870003. TG means it's the Guatemala office, 87 is the year, and 0003 is the case file number, and it was filed on an individual that was working out of the U.S. Embassy, who was a documented trafficker in DEA files working for Oliver North and the CIA down in Central America in El Salvador, and his name was Walter Gresheim. And Walter Gresheim was a documented trafficker. This guy was a civilian. He was not a military advisor or anything like that. This guy was a known drug trafficker working out of the U.S. Embassy in El Salvador, working out of Ilopango Hangars 4 and 5.
Sally, do you find any reference to that name in any of North's diaries or anything?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, on Oliver North's own diary, dated, I think it's September or something, of 1985, indicating that he mentions Wally Gresheim in his files. In his own handwriting, he talks about Wally Gresheim, and indicating that North knew that North was sleeping with members of the cartels. You know, it take a rocket scientist to figure out what was going on.
Gentlemen, this is demoralizing what we're hearing, and we're going to hear more. Don't go away, America. Chuck Carter, by the way, will be back on Monday. In the meantime, our special guest host is Terry Reed, and our special guest is Sally Costello. More is yet to come. Don't go away.
The World Web News Network.
The United States is praising part of a federal judge's ruling on tobacco today in Greensboro, North Carolina.
You are about to hear evidence that will repulse you. This is Phil Paleologus welcoming you back, and Chuck Carter, by the way, will return on Monday. Meanwhile, our special guest host is the best-selling author, Terry Reed, co-author of Compromise, Clinton Bush and the CIA, and also joining us is the former drug Drug Enforcement Administration agent Sally Costile. And my question is this. You presented, both of you, wretched crimes that were committed by U.S. officials. Now, it's repulsive to hear this, gentlemen, and the documentation that you've thus far presented states that the NSC and others were directly involved in drug businesses.
So as I read this indictment, let me read you a paragraph of it. I think it really sets it up for the people who just joined the program.
Sure.
The enterprise says, at all times relevant to this indictment, there existed an enterprise within the meaning of the Title 18. Of course, that's the criminal code.
Yes.
It's a group of individuals associated, in fact, which utilized the official positions of defendant George Herbert Walker Bush in the government of the United States of America to facilitate the transfer, importation, and distribution of large quantities of illegal narcotics within the United States. The thing that struck me as I read this that really gets into Sally's story is one item here of obstruction. You have to control, you know, this kind of a scandal in criminal enterprise, and that's where Shelley's story really comes home to roost here, because under obstruction of justice, I'll read you one paragraph. It says, to protect the enterprise and its illegal activities from discovery, the defendants, Bush, Gregg, North, Weld, and others, known and unknown to the grand jury, attempted to impede and prevent U.S. law enforcement agencies from investigating and prosecuting members of the enterprise and others involved in contra, drug trafficking, and other criminal activities. So you can see what you're hearing is a good field agent who's trying to do his job, who's developing good, high-grade intelligence that he's putting into reports. His reports are going nowhere.
So with this, Terry and Sally, either one of you, why aren't the responsible U.S. government officials in jail?
Well, let me answer that, Jerry, for
sure.
Before I continue, I just want to verify. That date on Oliver North's notebook was dated September 10th, 1985, where he was introduced by Wally Gresheim /Lipton. You know, that's his own handwriting. He's talking about Wally Walter L. Gresheim, a documented narcotics trafficker in DEA files, in 7 DEA files.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why, because we have a history going back to Vietnam, to Afghanistan, to the Cuban exiles, where the CIA, the NSA, has been implicated in narcotics trafficking. And to them, in Central America, was business as usual. And there was no shame, there was no heart to them to do what they were doing. They were sleeping with the cartels to finance
the
operation. And then what happened, Terry, the massive cover-up continued. I remember that when I was writing my reports implicating the Contras and the people in the CIA involved in narcotics trafficking, mind you, I also have documentation where the CIA not only knew but participated in giving U.S. visas to these narcotics traffickers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's very well documented. You know, and now, when they try to find out from the DEA and the State Department where my files were, the DEA denied that there were any files on the Contras. It was just a massive cover-up being conducted. So that is called obstruction of justice.
Yeah. And Phil, on the indictment, you read the name William F. Weld. And let's remind people who he is.
He is the governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
And at that time, which was crucial to the investigation that we're all talking about, the Iran-Contra investigation, if you remember, the so-called Hassan-Fuss airplane was shot down in October of 86. And at that time, Mr. Weld was the Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal of the U.S. Justice Department. And his name, by the way, was surfacing quite frequently in these hearings last fall there in Washington. In fact, a man named Jack Blum, who was a congressional investigator working for Mr. Kerry, Senator Kerry from Massachusetts, was on the stand, and I recall him. And when he was asked, where did you feel the roadblock was in your investigation to prove that the CIA was running drugs? And he said, in the office of Mr. Wells. So here's here's the man.
Are you saying, Terry, that the governor of Massachusetts back then exploited this position he held?
He erected a roadblock. I mean, the easiest thing you can do is not do your job. I think you would all agree to that statement. The Justice Department is the gatekeeper. Not everyone gets prosecuted of criminal activity in this country that commits crimes. It's a selective process. I know I've been there and seen it, but in this case, you've got people, Ed Meeson down in the Justice Department, who at that time did not want to put the system on trial. And the way they did that was in two ways. One was through selective prosecution, or just barring erecting a roadblock within the system, and the other one, Sally and I both have experienced, is the old national security trick. Everything becomes top secret.
Uh-huh.
Everything's classified. That, by the way, is in this indictment.
Yeah, they cite the Privacy Act law for national security, but in fact, it's being abused. There's nothing secure. National security is going to fall under that. There's nothing to threaten the Commonwealth, the U.S. This is just strictly abused by the U.S. government. And they continue to use that until 10 years later when they'll release it, and by then everybody's forgotten about it and they really don't care what really happened. But, you know, basically it's not going to go away. This is going to stay, and I think accountability is what's going to happen, and people had to go roll in Washington and starting with the DEA because they were instrumental in covering this whole up. Do you know that I have a letter dated May of 1996 by the administrator of the Drug Enforcement Administration? He, in that letter, he states, he completely lies to a U.S. Congressman, Doggett, Lloyd Doggett. He lies to him saying that the DEA has never, ever worked with a Guatemalan military G2. Where every operation we worked down in Central in Guatemala was with the Guatemalan military intelligence. He's lying to a U.S. congressman. That's obstruction of justice.
Sally, in the field, when you were investigating all this, when is the first time you heard the name Oliver North? How did you develop that name?
That was heard. I arrived in Guatemala on October of 1984. My country attaché, Bob Stia, at the time, forewarned me that there was a contra operation implicating them in narcotics trafficking. It was a covert operation being run out of El Salvador, run by the White House. That was the first time I heard that Oliver North was running the thing. And I said, you know, if those people are involved in narcotics trafficking, I will document them. He said, Sally, if you do that, your career is going to be short, not only in Central America, but with the DEA. I said, you know, I've took an oath to protect the Constitution of the United States, and I've fought for it several times. And I wasn't about to come to that little fork on the road and decide not to make it away. My job was to do my job and let the chips fall where they may. And that was one of the statements that the U.S. ambassador in El Salvador at the time, Edwin Core, told me, Sally, you do what you got to do. Because I don't like what's going on, but my hands are tied. There's nothing I can do. I've been ordered. He says, I've been ordered to back these people up, but whatever they're doing is right or wrong, I have to do it. So you do what you got to do and let the chips fall where they may. And they did. Now, when House of Puffs got shot down, of course, everybody was scrambling. And everybody was pointing. And I got to remind everybody also, you got to remember, we had Brian Barger from CNN who broke the story in late of 85 with the Congress being involved in narcotics trafficking. You know, we had a guy special for the New York Times who wrote about a raid that my group conducted on Wally Gresham's residence in El Salvador. This guy was a narcotics trafficker working for the U.S. Embassy. We raided his house and we found rooms, cases of U.S. munitions. We had files of payoffs to generals. We found drugs in his residence. All his vehicle had U.S. Embassy license plates, weapons belonging to the U.S. Embassy, and this guy was a civilian, mind you.
Shelley, to the best of your knowledge, has Mr. North ever been confronted with any of this evidence or names?
No, not at all. Oliver North refuses to even talk to me. He knows I have what they call the smoking gun, that I will nail him to the wall. Yeah. You know, that's we both took an oath to protect the Constitution, and I'm still trying to fight for this thing.
Yeah, well, that's the sad commentary, is which I don't think many people understand, and that's why I was asking you that question, is there is no venue for this information. The system, the judicial system I'm referring to, has made certain that no court of law will hear this information. Therefore, it's demoted down into the realm of talk shows and books.
Terry, one of the things that people will say, well, why am I coming out with this now? I've been coming out with it from the get-go. Now,
I know you have.
I'm not the only agent. There's a U.S. Customs agent that was in El Salvador with me at the time. His name is Victor Rivera. Richard Rivera. He's a U.S. Customs agent. He's now in Panama. He will go on the record and tell you what occurred down at Ilopango Airport with Oliver North. He's got his own files and his U.S. Customs files, numbers, to implicate this individual involved in narcotics trafficking. I am not the only one. There are several people. There's the U.S. Consul General by the name of Robert J. Chavez, who initiated the investigation on the Cartus and the CIA out of the U.S. Embassy in El Salvador. He's also a witness.
Kelly, what would be your advice to the listeners? What can they do? What can they all do to be assured that there's ultimately justice dealt here?
Well, to start off with, there's number one would be write to congressmen. Number two, they're going to come out with an open records act. There's Professor John Newman, who's trying to push the thing with Maxine Waters and trying to get an open records act to where the fact we will once and for all find out who was instrumental in the method cover-up. And if that passes, according to all the congressmen and the all U.S. senators are saying, yes, we will vote for the Open Records Act like they did with the JFK files, then we will be able to find out. And not only will we be able to find out who was involved in the cover-up, we will also stop this corruption, obstruction of justice, because accountability has to occur. And the people in Washington insist in covering up this massive covert operation being conducted, has it been a rule? They will have to be accountable. They will go to jail.
Sally, what banks were involved in this?
Well, let me tell you, one of the banks that was really involved in this whole thing was the BCCI investigation. As a matter of fact, there was a Guatemalan colonel by the name of Colonel Hugo Moran Carranza, who was in charge of Interpol for Guatemalan government, and he was also in charge on the investigation in the BCCI. The DEA themselves, Larry Howell, Marcos Gonzalez, who's a foreign national, they wired up a hotel room at the El Camino Real, where they were trying to get the payoff from the people from the bank into the owners of the BCCI investigations. And after this colonel threatened to assassinate me because I canceled his U.S. visa when I got extracted, and he was getting ready to go to war college in the U.S. by the CIA, when I canceled his visa, he threatened to assassinate me. Then we had Tony Restivudo, a special agent with the DEA in Washington, Internal Affairs, trying to get a U.S. visa for this same colonel so we could testify before the BCCI investigation in Florida. You know, how do you think I felt that my own agency was trying to get this colonel to come to testify for the BCCI investigation in Florida, knowing the fact that he was going to assassinate me?
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. It's just like Oliver North says, boggled my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the way our government works.
I'd like to know if any of these laundering institutions are still in operation who might now fund political campaigns that would continue to blockade any kind of progressive movement.
Yes, sir, there is. There's one in Guatemala. It's a bank in Guatemala that was run by an informant, a DEA informant by the name of Omar Pina Palma. Omar Pina Palma was shot out of the sky allegedly a month ago on an operation for the DEA, and this guy was instrumental in bringing to justice a lot of the Colombian cartel that he had been sleeping with for many, many, many years. And he was also laundering money. There was a case on him in 1991 for laundering narcotics funds from the cartels into Guatemala and into covert operations into Florida.
Gentlemen, we have racketeering, conspiracy to import narcotics, continuing criminal enterprise. Conspiracy to obstruct justice, conspiracy to obstruct Congress. Terry, how will we ever get to the bottom of this? How will the truth be revealed?
Well, I don't know Shelley's views on this, but mine are the following. I think that, first of all, everyone involved should be given blanket immunity. I think the only through blanket immunity, and I mean blanket, to include murder. We American people have to find out the truth. We can't operate with half facts and half truths. And as the case is normally made, why do we care about this? Because the statutes have already run on most of these overt acts. I think I fall in the same category as most people. We need to get to the truth, change whatever laws need to be changed, and then go forward. Make sure this doesn't happen again, or if it's still continuing, make sure it stops. Because my hot button, I'm sure Chuck's audience knows, is how the war on drugs has subverted our civil liberties in this country.
Absolutely.
So we need to get the government out of the drug business to begin with before we put more restraints on the American people. But there are a lot of solutions. The point is, nothing is being done to really hold these folks accountable. And now they are being given the opportunity to write history as they want it. And that's the frightening thing. I thought I would never live within a covert operation that implicated various administrations and then watch history being written.
It's offensive, appalling, upsetting. I'm completely distressed over this, but I'm glad you're bringing this truth out on the airwaves. By the way, America, Chuck Harder will return on Monday. Our special guest host is Terry Reed, and our special guest is DEA agent Sully Castile. Back, America, to Chuck Harder, who will be back on Monday. Meanwhile, this is Phil Paleologus, along with our special guest host, best-selling author Terry Reed, the co-author of Compromised, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. Get that book, it's wonderful. And also joining us is former DEA agent Sully Castile. And in the few minutes we have left this hour, gentlemen, what you're saying is Oliver North is a despicable scoundrel.
Well, as a former military person myself, I think North has gone beyond the pale in hurting people that work for him. I don't know if you've seen the movie Clear and Present Danger film. Mm-hmm. In that movie, which I think is very real to my experience, you see a president that's created a covert operation that becomes a liability. Then you watch how selfish these people behave as they abandon the foot soldiers. I view myself, Sully, and others as foot soldiers in this thing. We all come about it in different ways. We're attempting to serve our country. North personally, pushed all my hot buttons from the Vietnam War to get me to follow him into this fiasco. But you see where he is today. I mean, I've got 100 questions for Oliver North if we could ever get them to him. One is, why did he need such an elaborate security system? Back in the Iran-Contra time frame, his official spin on that is he needed to protect himself from militants out of the Middle East. I don't think that was the case at all. You've got Barry Seal and the Medellin cartel interacting directly with North. I mean, to me, that security system looks like somebody that's afraid of the Medellin cartel.
Yes.
But his lifestyle, how he affords his home, why his home is in a trust. I mean, the thing goes on and on and on. And we, the American people, are left at.
I understand what you're saying completely. And Sally, what do you do from here?
Well, basically, I'm working on a second book. My first book was called Powder Birds, Cocaine Cartels in the Drug War. That was published in 1984. If anybody's interested in getting a copy of the book, you can call 805 area code 899-3433. And he goes into detail on Oliver North involved in the narcotics trafficking issue down in Central America. And that happened in 1994 when I wrote this book. So it's very well documented. If people are really interested in knowing the whole truth about the whole thing, well, you go ahead and try to get a copy of my book and read it.
And that's Powder Burns, Cocaine, Contras, and the Drug War. And that number, once again, let's give folks a chance to write this down.
Sure. It's 805 area code 899-3433.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've read that book. It's an excellent book. I mean, it really is. It's got wrenching from firsthand accounts of not only what we're discussing here now, but how ruthless some of our allies are, some of Shelley's experiences when he was undercover in Guatemala in particular.
but I really think that's a must read for people that want to realize that there are people like Sully who are willing to put their life on the line, first to serve the country, and then secondarily put their life on the line, but in an attempt to bring this information public.
Well, my last comment would be, it's kind of sad, but it's very important. See, it cost him a lot to actually become a complete human being. And, I took an oath to protect the Constitution. I'm doing it. And, I've now become a veteran of three wars, the Vietnam War, the war on drugs, and now the most dangerous war, the war against the criminals in my own government, who are involved and continue to be involved in this massive cover-up.
My goodness, where have we come? Our forefathers are crying in their graves. The number once again for powder burns, cocaine, contras, and drug war is 1-805-899-3433. Sully Castillo, God bless you, and
thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Sully. Jerry, you're going to be rejoining us next hour, so don't go away. Take a little break here, as well as you, America. We're going to pause for a brief intermission. Meanwhile, more of Chucky's off today, but we'll return on Monday. Meanwhile, I'm very pleased to have joined me as a special guest host, Terry Reed, a favorite and familiar voice to Chuck Carter fans. Terry is a former Air Force intelligence operative who served in the most secret project of the Vietnam War, Task Force Alpha. In civilian life, Terry was recruited by the FBI's Counterintelligence Division to help combat the illegal sale of technology to the Soviet Union, and later became a CIA asset. Terry Reed is the co-author of the best-selling book, Compromised, and of course, it's a wonderful book, and you should go out and get it. United States District Court for the District of Columbia. United States of America versus George Herbert Walker Bush, Donald P. Gregg, Felix Rodriguez, also known as Max Gomez, Oliver L. North, also known as William Good, also known as Mr. Green, Richard D. Seckard, also known as Richard Cobb, also known as Major General Richard Adams, Robert W. Owen, also known as T.C., also known as The Courier, Adolfo Calero, Juan Norwin Meneses Cantarero, Oscar Danilo Blandon Reese, William F. Weld, all charged with racketeering, conspiracy to import narcotics, continuing criminal enterprise, conspiracy to obstruct justice, and conspiracy to obstruct Congress. Terry Reed, welcome to Chuck's program.
Well, thank you very, very much. It's a sad commentary to have to open a program with an indictment, but that's what we just did, and I might tell the listeners this is a draft indictment. It was put together using basically the parameters of court, and put together what is an indictment that should be in federal court, but it's not. This was put together by an organization called the Executive Intelligence Review, based in Washington, D.C.
What's the meaning of this draft indictment, Terry?
It's to prove to the people that if we had a Justice Department that worked, these kinds of court cases would be in court and not on talk radio. But we don't have. We have a system that's protecting itself. We the American people pay for a justice system that's failed us. And so this is to show that there is sufficient evidence to prove this case, not just a hodgepodge of characters with personal interests or axe to grind of their own.
For the new affiliates who have just joined us, exactly why isn't this in federal court?
Well, I think the cover-up of Iran-Contra began shortly after the Eugene Hasselbaum plane was shot down. Most legal scholars go back and look at what Ed Meese did, the then Attorney General did, in the terms of running around the White House, conducting his own personal investigation, taking interviews, keeping no notes, granting limited immunity. I mean, the fix was in right there.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually that limited immunity that was granted by the Attorney General is what undid Oliver North's conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And North sits there on his talk show trying to convince people that he's not a felon. Well, he was proven a felon.
and a professional perjurer and liar and obstructed Congress. And it just amazes me that he now has a talk show when she goes on the offensive and tries to hold this high standard that he claims other people are not up to. But be that as it may, the system failed us when it refused or allowed Oliver North and others to get off of the hook, especially when George Bush granted immunity to the people that he did as he left office in 1992.
Atrocious. No.
Well, it was. And it was a sad, sad day, and I don't think the American people have really realized the impact yet.
No, and I'm glad you're here to relate the truth to us and to get a side that nobody has ever reported.
Well, what caught my eye in this draft indictment was, a lot of things, but when you get into the cover-up aspects of this, I think that's what most people need to hear in order to, to realize the depth of this. You realize all the resources that the federal government had at its disposal within the judicial system primarily were used to cover this thing up. That's why people like North and others are allowed to waffle in their comments and leave most reporters back in the dust, because the reporters just don't know the questions to ask. Most are not that knowledgeable on this time frame.
That's no excuse, actually.
I know it's not, but when people give them flippant comments
or press releases,
prepared statements and degrade it down to humor. And most of these younger reporters in particular are just not that knowledgeable on the minutia and innuendo to counterattack and respond back. They just accept the version. But, this one statement here, I'll read it to you. It says, this is about the cover-up and the conspiracy to obstruct. It says, between 1986 and continuing up through at least 1989, defendants Bush and others quashed at least 6 investigations of drug trafficking and money laundering in and around Mena, Arkansas.
Wow.
Now that, of course, is my old stomping ground. And you can see why I perk up when I read what is obviously a very time-consuming effort to organize this material into a judicial format.
This is outrageous.
It would be presentable in a court of law.
This is an outrageous abuse of power.
Yeah.
Where are we at with this now?
Well, we're trying to hold trial right here in the people's court. I mean, are you the bailiff today? Or?
I'll be the bailiff.
Well, our next witness
is
a really interesting person. He comes at this, like myself, from the military side of things, and is a man who has served his country going back to the Vietnam War. Most of us that were gobbled up into this thing were people who were not draft dodgers, who served our country and then later saw a necessity to reserve our country. Some of us did it out of uniform, like myself. This man, Chip Tatum, our next guest or a witness, is a person who was actually in Honduras and other places in Central America, which he'll tell you about. He was up to his ears what was obviously a violation of the so-called Boland Amendment. That was the law, as you probably recall, by Congress to keep us out of this conflict. But when you hear Chip's story unfold, I mean, you better grab your seatbelt, because he implicates them all.
Chip Tatum? Mm-hmm. Okay. Chip Tatum, welcome. How are you?
Thank you, Bill. I'm fine. Thank you.
You're a career intelligence operative.
That's correct.
You served, in the CIA, the DIA, where else?
And the NSC.
NSC, okay. Chip, tell us your story.
I left the intelligence community in about 1978. I had served from 1971 through 1978, but it's so burdensome. Working in that arena for so long, I was tired. I wanted to start a family, so I left the intelligence community, and in 1980 I was reactivated. I was sent to U.S. Army Flight School and subsequently stationed at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. They were forming a new aviation brigade for special operations at Fort Campbell, which was 160th Aviation Battalion. That particular unit is known today as Task Force 160. We were controlled by the CIA. And I recall my first meeting as a pilot with Task Force 160 with a man named Jake. This man named Jake appeared on the scene the morning following a Loach crash. That's one of our small little birds, we called them. It was a Hughes 500 crashed into some power lines in Dover. The following morning, a man from Washington and a companion showed up on site. He was wearing blue jeans and introduced himself as Jake. I would later find out that his true name was Oliver North.
And what was his purpose there?
He was one of the handlers, one of the controllers for Task Force 160. 160th was an anti-terrorism, anti-whatever they needed group of specialized pilots. They're the ones who today, I know all of you listeners out there talk about the black helicopters. Those are the pilots of the black helicopters.
And so what country was were you primarily based in, Chip, as you conducted your operations down there?
I was primarily based out of Honduras at Pomerola Air Base. The Boland Amendment, when the Boland Amendments came out, they restricted any military operations and direct CIA or intelligence support of the Contras. So to circumvent that, one clause was put in it other than humanitarian. So we were able to operate as CIA operatives and pilots, as medevac pilots, flying medevac helicopters in the area of Honduras, Nicaragua, El Salvador.
Chip, when did you sense that something terribly awful and scandalous and atrocious was happening?
On February 26th, I was tasked to fly two civilian pilots from El Salvador to a Contra camp to arrange airdrops. I flew them to the Contra camp, El Paraiso. When we left the Contra camp, we were given two large coolers marked vaccine to deliver to La Mesa Airport in Honduras. That happened to be where we were dropping off the pilots after their meeting. We dropped the pilots off at La Mesa, and while unloading the two coolers, they were extremely heavy, very large 96-quart coolers. They were extremely heavy. They weighed about 200 pounds. We dropped one of them, myself and my medic. When we opened the cooler, we found that it contained bags and bags and bags, over 100 bags of a white crystalline substance. I knew enough to taste it, and the moment I tasted it, my tongue went numb, so I knew what I had.
You had cocaine.
Cocaine.
And what was the purpose and the mission and the destination of this cocaine, Chip?
Those particular containers of cocaine were going on a C-130. That C-130 was bound for Panama. But I called the man who had been assigned as my handler in Honduras, and his name was Major Rodriguez. Major Rodriguez, I found later, was actually a man named Felix Rodriguez, wearing the uniform of a U.S. Army intelligence officer.
Let me read something to you, Phil. On the ink against the indictment, it says Rodriguez, they're referring to Felix Rodriguez, was sent by Bush, meaning George Bush, and Don Gregg, to Central America in January 1985 to set up his base of operations at Ilopango Air Base in El Salvador. Of course, you know, I interacted with Felix quite a bit in Mexico.
Yes.
And in Arkansas. He really got around. But when I heard Chip's story for the first time, which was a couple of years ago, I became extremely interested in because the same cast of characters that I was interacting with and knew they were bad people, here Chip just reinforces that from an operational end. I mean, these guys actually had him running around inspecting coca labs. I'd love to get into that portion of the story. I don't know how close we are to a break.
Well, we're right on it right now, but
okay.
That is absolutely sinister. Yes, we will definitely get into that issue. America, don't go away. Chuck Harder, by the way, will return on Monday. Meanwhile, this is Phil Paleologus, along with our special guest host, Terry Reed. And also joining us is a former DEA agent, Chip Tatum. Don't go away. Chuck Harder will return on Monday. Meanwhile, this is Phil Paleologus, along with our special guest host, best-selling author Terry Reed, the co-author of Compromised, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. And also joining us is a former CIA, NSC, and DIA agent, Chip Tatum and Terry Moore about to share some chilling and shocking revelations. But before we took this break, why don't you continue on with your evidence?
Well, as you read this this draft indictment, and again, this is right out of Oliver North's diaries. This is not hearsay. This is after people have gone to court and spent a lot of money to get some of the pages of North's diaries unredacted, so who knows what's still hiding behind the black ink of the pages that we can't read, but here's one entry. For example, on May the 12th, 1984, North wrote in his notebook, quote, "Contact indicates Gustavo is involved with drugs," end quote. Now let me ask, let's ask Chip what he knows about Gustavo. Who is Gustavo?
Gustavo was General Gustavo Alvarez. He was the chief of staff of the Honduran Army out of Tegucigalpa, Honduras. When we flew Gustavo, or General Alvarez, around the area of operations in Honduras and Nicaragua into the camps, he would fly disguised as a man we called Dr. Gus. We recorded his name on the flight plans as Dr. Gus also.
And did you get the impression that he was involved directly in the cocaine business, the drug trafficking business at that time?
Well, the camps that we flew into in Roost outside of El Paraiso and others had one thing in common. They would have the main camp and they would have a subsidized camp, a smaller area. And I believe five of those camps had cocaine kitchens that were active and producing. And General Alvarez visited them each time we went in.
Yeah, Chip, were the revenues from the cocaine and the marijuana that destroy our children here in the States used to expend any of the needs of the CIA?
I believe that those, and this is just speaking from my own opinion, I believe that the money is coming out of that, coming out of Honduras. I flew 4 tons of the product in our medevac aircraft that I commanded. And that's a ballpark figure. It's probably low. That's how many containers I recall flying. And 4 tons at $15,000 to $20,000 a kilo is an enormous amount of money, more money than the Contras ever saw. Where did the money go is the question. Who has the money today?
And what is your speculation?
I speculate that Mr. North bought a very fine home with that money, with a portion of it.
That's hideous.
Yeah, I think people should pull out their, I was in the military, people, those carry around their little pay scale chart, looked at what retirement pay was, and I know Mr. North has certainly tapped into other money since his time there before at the National Security Council, but there's an interim period that was even coming up in the Contra hearings, and that was how Mr. North had no money. Certainly as a major in Washington, D.C., with a high cost of living, your major salary doesn't go very far.
Right.
If you recall, in the hearings, there was a lot of discussion. They had Mr. North's secretary before Congress, and she was complaining that how North had borrowed money from her for lunch. He was first assigned to Washington. He was continuously broke until the Enterprise got going, and he started interacting with General Secord, former General Secord, and Adolfo Calero, and no one has ever really questioned him about the source of his newfound wealth.
Why?
There's never been a venue. You know, it's my theory, Phil, and a lot of people agree with me. The Contra hearings, up to a point, those being conducted by Lawrence Walsh in Congress, were attempting to deal with very serious issues, and the issues involved constitutional issues of bypassing the elected government, going through a micro-government, manipulating the big one, and those are serious topics, but there became a point in time when you'd almost hear the air brakes go on in this investigation, and it went to a halt, and there was no further movement towards the big picture,
It was like, let's go back and see who's perjured themselves, kind of a reaction.
Right.
And it became that, a trial of perjury, which means they discovered the drug trafficking.
Plain and simple. That's only shameful. America, don't go away. We need to break here. Chuck Harder will return on Monday. In the meantime, our special guest host is the best-selling author, Terry Reid, author of Compromised. Also joining us is a former CIA, NSC, and DIA agent, Chip Tatum. And we'll be back, America. Don't go away.
Federal court in Denver today. The jury heard a tape of the explosion and then more testimony. Anti-smoking lawmakers and President Clinton are hailing today's decision by a federal judge on tobacco.
Welcome back, all of our loyal affiliates and listeners to Chuck Harder's For the People. And at this time, America, feel free to join us. We'll gladly pay for the call. You can dial 1-888-822-8255. Let me repeat that, 1-888-822-8255. And it's an opportune time to call. We have open lines right now. And our very special guest host is the best-selling author, Terry Reid, who co-authored Compromised, Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. And also joining us is a former CIA, NSC, and DIA agent by the name of Chip Tatum. And gentlemen, before we go to our phone calls, our Talk America flagship is in Boston, Massachusetts, and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is governed by William F. Weld. Now, he's being considered to become an ambassador to Mexico. Now, what implications does this bring into view in terms of the past and with the Clinton administration?
Well, I think you can probably predict my comments. I mean, I lived in Guadalajara for 2 years, so that was actually in Guadalajara where I came face to face with the Contra drug ring. I mean, for what I could no longer deny that it was in existence, and some of the people, Phil, who had just been held accountable and went down with the Mexican DEA chief out of Mexico were people who I interacted with and people who I wrote about back in 1992, 93. And so, I mean, with Mr. Weld and others, I noticed that Mac McClarty, the White House staff, is now trying to get a job in Mexico. Seems to be a lot of interest in Mexico right now by people who obstructed justice and covered up for this Contra drug connection. I don't think they should be allowed to go down and represent our country, at least not without some really, really hard questioning during confirmation hearings.
Chip, do you feel as though the truth will ever surface and perhaps, hopefully, cleanse the filthy abuse of power that has taken place?
Well, to be honest, I know that there are many of us out there who are more than willing to come forward and talk about the truth. And on my part, I can do more than talk. I documented all of this information on the back of flight plans that we've received certified copies of from Honduras lately. However, so many of us who are willing to come forward who can come forward are afraid for their lives. And I literally mean afraid for their lives. These people, one of their former contacts is willing to come forward, would stop at nothing to keep them from coming forward. They would imprison them. They would have them assassinated.
Well, and Phil, you know, what I notice about these hearings that end up being sort of political pillow fights, people who can testify in the first tense are not normally invited. Who can say I and bring documents with them? Somehow they're just not invited to the party. Journalists and people who are so-called investigators and congressional investigators—it's like they're brought back in to retell their version of what they discovered at that time. But there's never any new and earth-shattering information added to the formula, and which to me just tells me they don't want the truth.
And Terry, along those same lines, if they really wanted the truth, in the original hearings, they could have called any of the military officers who were actually stationed in Honduras. But
well, how about, you know, what's wrong with Chip with starting with the people that George Bush pardoned?
I was very good at
a congressional investigation, not being a rocket scientist. I would use my Missouri logic and say, let's get in Cap Weinberger and John Poindexter and Richard Secord and the whole cast of characters that were granted pardons by George Bush and begin right there. They obviously know something.
or Bush wouldn't have covered up for them.
It's beyond belief. I mean, we have a subversion of our Constitution here. We're going to continue with more discussion and your phone calls, America, in just a moment.
Do you believe in miracles? Hi, I'm Dr. Greg Seymour from the Phonics Gate, and I want to tell you about a mom who calls her second grader's experience a miracle. Nathan was reading slowly and struggling with his vocabulary and spelling. His teacher suggested it might be wise to hold him back to repeat the second grade. It almost made Nathan's mom sick to think of him struggling behind the other students, but holding him back frightened her even more. That's when she decided to take the...
Welcome back, America. Chuck Harder will return on Monday. Meanwhile, this is Phil Paleologus, along with our special guest host, best-selling author Terry Reid, co-author of Compromised, Clinton Bush and the CIA. And also joining us is former CIA, NSC, and DIA agent Chip Tatum. And before we go to our calls, gentlemen, is there a number where people can call, or maybe an address, Terry, where folks can obtain this draft indictment?
Yeah, all they really have to do is call 1-800-201-7892, and many of the materials we're discussing today are available through that number.
Okay, that's 1-800-201-7892. We'll repeat that number just in case folks driving or at home didn't have a pencil. We'll get one. We'll put that in a few minutes. In the meantime, let's go to Jacksonville, Florida, gentlemen, via shortwave and say hello to Virginia. Virginia, welcome. How are you?
I'm just fine. And Terry, I'm glad to hear your voice. You sound that you're not under the stress that you have been in the past, and I hope that is the case.
It is the case.
Great. Wonderful.
Thank you.
I have been praying for you. I have to ask you before I get into what you're talking about. In 1974, September, you were writing a book, Fatal Knowledge. Have you done anything more with that?
Oh, you mean the book, the sequel to Compromise?
Right.
Yeah, I'm still working on that. Unfortunately, I just don't have the time to devote full time to it. But I would think I would have that finished sometime this fall or winter.